Good afternoon. Welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
What you got for us, Bill?
Well, you know what? We have a sponsor this hour, Pape Machinery. They're our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. And, we got a little sidebar there. Pape Machinery is located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. And they're everything John Deere. So if you're looking for a tractor, a mower, a implement of any kind, go up and see them. They can get you fixed up. They also have full parts and service right there. Or give them a call at 226-9226 or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com. And there we go. That's
having some little technical problems over here.
Yeah, you're kind of crawling in and out of that bag. I thought you were going to do a magic act.
I was going to do a magic act. I had a rabbit in there,
yeah,
which is probably why my eyes are itching.
It could be. You put that rabbit away.
Oh, my God. I had a dream last night that we moved. And we moved to this house, and I got there.
That's already a nightmare.
We got there, and it had mint-colored green, you know, like a mint-green shag rug. And then it turned out they had a cat, but then I got inside the house, and not only did they have a rug on the floor, but they had carpeting on the walls.
Wow, do they have a green refrigerator to match?
So I want to know what it means when you dream that you just bought a house that has mint-colored shag rug on the walls. That's not a good sign.
But you didn't do your homework.
Bottom line is you better make sure I don't go to the realtor without you. Pretty funny. Anyway, lunacy aside, we are talking about China today. We're having a little technical issue with our other guest that I'll get squared away here. Momentito. We'll just talk our way through it because that's how radio works. You just keep talking while you fix
it. It's a good medium for talking.
While you fix the other stuff. Da, 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 da. Why don't I just leave it to you? You go ahead and tell people whatever they need to know.
Well, we're talking about the CCP today.
Yes.
And how they're
remember a few years
a lot
ago, we didn't have any idea
think.
What that meant.
Probably not.
Chinese Communist Party. And unfortunately, now it's like everyone knows what that means, which is terrifying all at the same time. But there was a thing in the news you might have missed about the head of Huawei being released.
And released from detention in Canada, I believe.
Yeah, and I don't want to wreck it, but let's see. I am doing my technicalness.
Yeah, she was being held there because I think they wanted her in the United States for espionage or something, didn't they?
Yeah, isn't that handy?
Yeah, and now she's back home.
And nothing happened to her?
No.
Nothing
She's
happened.
Got an extended vacation.
So there's a really...
She probably learned French while she was there.
There's a really, really solid thought that the Chinese government actually is Huawei, which I don't think, like you said earlier, most people wouldn't be surprised about that.
Well, I just wonder how many people realize how big Huawei is and what they have their hands in. And I can just about guarantee you that you wouldn't have to look very hard around your own house to find Huawei products that are more than likely reporting your personal information back to China.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Handy, huh?
Yeah, very handy.
Uh-huh.
And our government likes to contract with them because they're such a good company
to work
for.
They were going to allow them to have 5G, all the 5G. Contract here, and people were not only not happy about having 5G, but okay, so if you call that and you pretend we're the host, they should be able to call into that too. We're using a conference call system. We're going to figure it out because when we have two people call us on two different lines, they can't hear each other. And well, we all know how fun that is because we used to do that in the past. We used to try to make that happen, and that was a loser.
Yeah.
So anyway. Let's see. So while they're getting that squared away, we should probably just at least put out a little bit of information about the $3.5 trillion nightmare that is percolating out there in the American system. We don't have to be taken over by the Chinese, I guess, if they can get all that stuff through, because it'll be a massive a massive social spending program
that
will create havoc and just massive entitlements.
And massive entitlements, massive inflation, as if prices aren't going up fast enough already. That'll create a real nightmare for us.
Yeah, everyone needs free medical, free dental. What was the other stuff they were rattling off today?
Free school, free child care, free...
everything.
Yeah.
And we've let millions of people into the country who
all we
are
have
not
to do to make
here,
that happen is just print more money and then everybody can have some.
Of course.
Yep, that's how it works.
And those things are never temporary. So anyone who says, well, these are just temporary programs to get people on their feet or something like that, yeah, we all know how that works.
Once you give it to people, you can't take it away.
But in the meantime, we're putting all these restrictions on our businesses and all that. But to kind of go back to how that's all working, the left is really fighting with itself. The Democrats are fighting with themselves because the far left wants a bigger bill. They don't want the actual infrastructure bill voted on until that's added to it. And, everybody gets mad. Why aren't the Republicans stopping them? Well, the Republicans don't get to stop them. Majority has consequences, so they're not in majority, and they don't get to, quote, stop them. It doesn't, that doesn't happen.
They have a say, but the say doesn't really have that much impact.
Yeah. No, not really.
Yeah. I'm kind of busy right now. Oh, sorry.
So I like the sounds of the phone in the background.
Oh,
hey, we can hear you.
I'm Eric Chen. I'm a new guest for this program. I'm very excited.
Hey.
For having such wonderful opportunity.
Nice. We could stop stalling for time now. Okay, so...
you couldn't hear us.
We can. We needed to get both of you on a conference call so we could hear both of you at the same time and you could hear each other. So
I'm here. Perfect. Did you call the conference call?
Yeah.
I did, but no one is there.
Nice.
I did. Should I call that number, too?
No, you're both on it.
Yeah,
you're
both,
all good.
You're both live on air right now, so that's great. Thanks for for calling in.
We like to do all our scrambling on the air so nobody thinks we're all, we're all fancy or professional.
Hey, if it was easy, anybody could do it.
And we're very forthcoming about our shortcomings.
Well, exactly. You might as well just do it right out in the open, right?
So we're very genuine. We're very genuine. Go ahead.
Well, okay, so Dr. Chen, we have spoken with you a bunch of times, which is awesome, and we have a body of your shows that goes back into 2019. We've got them listed. I didn't give a date. Let's see. We are October 3rd, 2021 today in case we re-air this. So, Eric, you are a new voice for us. So, without going into any kind of detail, we're always curious when people come to this country from somewhere else. I'm always curious to know what was the first impression, what was different from what you thought, and why did you wind up staying?
It is a very good question. When I just set my foot on the soil of the United States, America, about, 25 years ago, I felt finally I'm liberated. I can do whatever I want that is to fulfill my dream, and nobody is watching me. But now I no longer feel that safe. It is a big, big change from 25 years ago.
Interesting. So you felt like you were out of the reach of the Chinese government when you came here.
Right. I participated in the 1989 Tiananmen Square protest. And I saw personally tanks rolling into the square. And so I spent several years, you can tell, to come to this country very, very hard during that period. And I succeeded 25 years ago, and I thought finally I got to the land of freedom, and I could shake off the bad memories about this country. But now I see more people from China coming to this country, and even worse, I see even enablers of the regime that are doing the bidding of the Chinese government, although they don't speak Chinese the way I can. And I came across a piece of news about a Chinese graduate student enrolled at a law school in Canada. He somehow casually had a Twitter post, which is negative of Chinese leader, and he only got two followers. Very poor guy, you know, not much a rock star.
He was not awesome with Twitter.
But still, his family was harassed. He was on the leader screen of a Chinese security apparatus. That was scary. That would not happen 25 years ago. Did you think, Aaron?
Yeah, probably not. I mean, a guy with two Twitter followers, he makes, and it was kind of an innocuous post. It wasn't like he had some deep, dark information. He wasn't a whistleblower of any kind.
No, not at all. And in a related matter, there was also a graduate student enrolled in European research program who was forced to quit under the pressure, well, of course, not exerted on him, because of the pressure exerted by the Chinese government on his advisor because of some more strident comments he shared on Twitter about Chinese government. And there were another isolated case, kind of like a similar case, relating to a student in Minnesota. He actually eventually didn't come back to the United States. He just apologized to Chinese government to let him go back. He went back to the country due to some negative Twitter messages, very similar to the experience of the Canadian graduate student. So all these exceptional cases are built up to make it sort of a pattern that made me a little bit kind of, you know, worried about the direction in which this country is going as far as its relation with China goes.
Yeah, I'd be worried too. And they don't make any distinction, I'm just guessing. There's no distinction between people who are current Chinese citizens and then people who come from China but live in live in America.
You're
now.
They talking about American passport, and it makes no difference.
they come after
in
everybody.
Their mind, I'm still Chinese. And my family there are still their citizens. I don't think it makes any difference at all. And to answer your question, I guess you have some kind of add-on to my previous answer. China has become a very different country. China is much more powerful in comparison with a status 25 years ago. Economically, it has become kind of a superpower that it wasn't 25 years ago, largely due to its entry into WTO. On that, I have a lot to say. I really feel sorry for the person or the U.S. president, the politician who allowed China to be admitted to the World Trade Organization, its current trade pact with the world. Before that, China had to be reviewed for its human rights record every year, and China would not be able to trade freely with, industrialized countries to steal the technology as easily as it is today. So that is a big, big change. So I believe that an American politician who allowed China to be into WTO is more deserving than Chairman Mao to stay in that coffin to be reviewed by Chinese people in Tiananmen Square. Chairman Mao Zedong, only created the party and created the country, but he ran the whole country and the whole economy into the ground. Comrade President here, I think most of the our audience would know the name, actually was the savior of the regime when its economy actually was in not in good shape. Of course, there was another president who went there, along with Mr. Kissinger, that saved the party previously. So these people, what I call enablers, were the culprit for the whole saga of Sino-U.S. Relationship and the worsening of the situation as far as the U.S. is concerned.
Hmm. Well, I think that as we continue to go down this crazy road that we're on, with you know, multi-trillion-dollar entitlement programs, and you know, we've got as you mentioned, you know, we've got Twitter spying on people, and it's not just the Chinese Communist Party spying on them. I mean, they're getting rid of anybody who says anything about the virus. You know, if you don't toe the party line on the virus, you get erased from YouTube and Twitter and Facebook, and it's no longer a free and open sharing of ideas. And I'll bet you guys have to be looking at just like deja vu all over again.
Yes, exactly. I always feel, you know, sorry for those people who have been assaulted by misinformed American guys, because the virus was spread by us with Asian faces. Of course, there have been a lot of talk about origin of the virus. It could be from, very likely, from a scientific research center in the city of Wuhan, and some people in the U.S. government gave them money to do the research, so-called functional benefit. I don't know, syndrome.
Gain of function.
Yeah, you know. But then, actually, I would say it was exactly those enablers who have allowed the Chinese government. We can put their face and name to this ignominious title of enablers. We know who they are, and we know what has happened. So it is not these innocent people living in Chinatown who should be the target of the, you know, of this kind of negative sentimentality. It should be the CCP. So the virus should always be called the CCP virus. If there were one error made by President Trump, he did a wonderful job, you know, on the frontiers dealing with the Chinese regime. If there were only one error, that is, he should have called the virus the CCP virus, not a China virus.
Yeah, that would have. But, you know, if you think about it, when that was happening, people didn't know what the CCP was. We had to keep explaining it on our program when we had people on. People didn't, the CCP, when you said CCP, that didn't actually mean anything to people until, I'm going to say, like midway last year.
I wasn't here in the 80s or 70s when the Cold War was at its peak. At that time, when you mentioned to somebody on the street, USSR, that they register in that guy's mind, USSR, the official name of the Soviet Union.
You know, it's funny. I was a kid. I was born in 1961. So I was a kid in the 60s and 70s, and I just remember you didn't want to be called a commie. That was the that was like the ultimate you know, slap in the face. You're a commie, and that was still bad. But I don't know if we did you, Bill? Did you were I was on the East Coast. You were on the West Coast.
Oh yeah, there was a lot of. I mean, I wouldn't say a lot, but you heard about it.
Did they know USSR though as a term? Was that?
Oh yeah.
Really?
Oh yeah. Yeah. And you know, that was in kind of the depths of the Cold War, and it was still pretty divided at that time as far as East and West.
See, I don't remember ever hearing that, but I mean, true confessions, I lived 50 miles from Woodstock when Woodstock happened, and I didn't know that it happened. So.
Yeah. You were pretty connected.
We didn't get out that much.
But China wasn't the issue back then. It was Russia.
No, he was just saying the terminology.
Uh-huh.
But now CCP, I think, is fairly wide. I mean, I think you'd probably get maybe 7 out of 10 people on the street. It would know what that meant. Maybe. Uh-oh. Did we lose you guys?
No, we're here.
Oh, sorry. It just got awfully quiet all of a sudden. It got that suspicious quietness. Okay, so we'll take a break in like 5 minutes or so, I guess. And so you can decide how you want to do this. But I think that a lot of people are suspicious of Huawei. They're suspicious of them because they think that they're a front for the Chinese government. But I don't think people really understand what that means exactly, and maybe how tightly that's all connected. Can you guys make that make sense for people?
Yeah, there are two major events that has happened, you know, in the past couple of weeks. One was the release of Huawei's CFO, Joe. She happened to be the daughter of Huawei founder.
Uh-oh, you're too far away from your signal or something. You're cutting out really bad. Sorry.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Hey, there we go.
That's better.
Okay. Sorry. There's two big news that happened in the span of the last couple of weeks. One is the release of Huawei's CFO, Meng Wanzhou, her name is. And she happened to be the daughter of Huawei's CEO, founder and CEO, Ren Zhengui. And
Maybe we better take our break a little earlier and see if we can get our signal situation figured out. We're just having too much cutting out.
Okay, we're going to take a break now.
Oh, we can hear you just fine. Can you channel him?
I don't want to be kind of a monologue here, but I thought we had a lot of, you know, sources to have this discourse. So because Dr. Chen is having this problem voice, I'll probably will chime in a little bit about Huawei.
Yes, please.
And I'm in a sector. I'm an IT worker in Northern California. And, of course, I know one or two things about Huawei. First of all, it is the world's largest telecommunications equipment gear maker. We all know 20 years ago it was Lucent, but Lucent was no longer there. We made a blunder not helping those companies in the essential sector, such as telecommunications making. And now we have to rely on foreign technology. And Huawei has been trying to penetrate, expand their Western markets the past decade. However, its effort has largely stopped in recent years because of thanks to the intervention of the U.S. government on suspicion, as Aaron pointed out, of the company's close tie to Chinese government. So the $1 million question is, does Huawei, officially a private business, really have any Chinese government official ties that could give us teachers, as Bill pointed out, that our emails or information could be sent to Chinese government. Let's have a quick review of its history. The company was built up in 1987 by Mr. Ren. It's just called Mr. Ren, or Mr. R. It's easier. The father of the released the CFO. I think Mr. Ren remarried and Meng Wanzhou, Meng, kept her father's mother's name. Of course, it is a PR coup for Huawei because they have been jeopardized by U.S. effort to stop its growth here. That has led to 80% decrease of their smartphone sales. So they were like euphoric. There were throngs of audience people, you know, crowds at the airport to receive her exactly 1 week ago at a company. They hung at a headquarters building, hung slogans that welcome her back, and also the messages of homecoming emblazoned employees. Like a huge spiritual kind of spirit lift for the company. However, to answer the question of the true identity of Huawei, we need to look at the biographical information of the founder, Mr. Ren, okay, Mr. R, to make it easier. This guy, Mr. R, if you search internet, didn't have too much information about him. And I'm Chinese. I read Chinese very well, of course. So I'm going to share with you some of the discovery that found a couple years back, and still they have left some trails on the internet, but definitely not in the English language sphere. So there was circumstantial evidence that point to Huawei's connection with the Chinese government. First of all, this guy, Mr. Ren, is a PLE man, or former PLE man. That's how we call GI in China. PLE stands for People's Liberation Army. It's completely controlled by the Chinese Communist regime. So this guy, Mr. R, graduated or went to college in 1963, which coincided with the popularity of a new novel, a bestseller called Red Rock. So to cut this long story short, one of the protagonists in that story, a 20-ish guy, very glamorous, a Chinese agent, is called Huawei. And in that time period, there were not too many bestsellers. Dr. Chen and I both went through that period. We knew there were hardly one or two novels that would show up every year, only probably three or five non-documentary type of fiction-based movies. So I could tell this name, Huawei, captured the imagination of the young Mr. Ren, who was enrolled at the same university as described in a novel that this fictional figure, Huawei, enrolled. And this fictional Huawei was, like I said, the very sexy, glamorous 007 agent. And all the other figures in the novel were based on real characters. So, and he didn't want to be associated with them. They were old. They were old, you know, old hacks. That he didn't want to, you know, to give him the inspiration. So understandably, Huawei became the name of the company he built up in 1987.
And Huawei was in the character in the book. Was that
probably the character in the note in an anti-U.S. novel?
Interesting.
So this novel is about a bunch of Chinese agents fighting with the Kuomintang nationalist police, as well as their CIA advisors. There was an American guy there, because during the World War II, the nationalists and Americans, they were close allies. They built up this facility called the Sino-U.S. Collaboration Center to provide intelligence to Allied forces in a fight against Japanese. And this facility stayed when the Japanese was defeated, and it became a device to fight against the communists. And so the police were under direct supervision of the U.S. boss. I think the name of the guy was actually real. What is that? Not Dallas, but it's Alice, something. I forgot. Actually, it was a real person. So they were fighting against the U.S. And Huawei emerged as the youngest guy who was the hero who killed a turncoat, with a pistol. So he was a hero. He was a hero in a novel.
How fascinating. Hey, hang on for just a second, Eric. Let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back, and we'll after this break, we'll go straight to the top of the hour with you, so we won't have any interruptions. I definitely.
Sure, no problem. I'll be here.
Yeah, that's exciting. I don't think anybody really knows this. I don't know why we would know the origins of the company, but the origins say a lot about the company, and I think it's important
it's
for people to know at this point.
It's fitting very well with the mission of Huawei.
Yeah.
That is performing today.
Yeah, kind of a little insight there. It's amazing what a little information will do. So our guests are Eric Chan and Dr. Shizong Chen. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. That's the end game, ruling the world. So, okay, Eric, go back to the story on Huawei. I won't derail you.
Eric, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Okay, first of all, I have to clarify something. Dr. Chen and me, Eric Chen, we're not related. We're not brothers, although we are.
Oh, yeah, that's cool.
A band of brothers. A band of brothers, yeah. Actually, your name is Master spelled C-H-E-N, mine is C-H-A-N. I think I'm superior. A is, you know, ahead of the E in some way.
Oh, anyway. Potato, potato.
All right, okay.
Chen, yeah, it's all the same.
By the way, it's fantastic. So, this guy, Mr. Ren, graduated from college and joined the engineering corps of the People's Liberation Army. So some of you might have read it in the press that his origins did trouble some people, including lawmakers on the Hill. And then the most damning evidence that has been withheld on the internet was his attendance at a very prestigious conference put together by none other than Deng Xiaoping himself. That is something probably only people, I give them at my age, I don't think Dr. Chen care either. So we came from that era. There was a big event in 1978 when Deng Xiaoping was still bidding for power. The nominal leader is actually called Mr. Hua, but not Huawei. So Deng Xiaoping put together this conference called National Science Conference. He invited the leading scientists to map out a strategy for scientific development of this country. It's a high-profile event. You can tell that by the locale. It was held in People's Conference Hall, or People's Hall, you know, in Tiananmen Square. That was a very prominent landmark building. It was held there. And this guy, Mr. Ren Zhengfei, was there on behalf of People's Liberation Army. Mm-hmm. It was a liberal. So he was not just a regular PLA man. He's elite scientist for People's Liberation Army. I could only manage to find one piece of damning evidence on internet now in Chinese from his interview, a transcript of interview with Voice of Germany. He acknowledged that. At that time, he was not even a party member, he said, because of some family problem with the regime. And then he acknowledged, he reviewed the fact that it was the Central Committee of the CCP that initiated an investigation of him and then put him on the fast track to become a communist member and to become elite scientist. Okay, it took the central government, Central Committee. So he was an elite scientist or engineer working for the government and working for China's military. that was the short and long story about Huawei. And also, Huawei received a lot of subsidy. You know, in China, if you are in the economy sector, you would know they are trying to promote state-owned enterprises. And they try to force private businesses to be taken over by state enterprises. You know, Jack Ma, the famous legendary private businessman, entrepreneur, was forced to vanish from public view for almost 1 year because of some remarks. And his company was barred from IPO on the personal directive from Chinese leaders, but not the case with Huawei. Huawei has been receiving huge government subsidies. Back in 1990, when Huawei ran into some tax issue with the government, Wu Bangguo, Chinese vice premier in charge of state-owned enterprises. Okay, let me emphasize. The vice premier in charge of state-owned enterprises personally intervened to clear the company of the case. And also, in another piece published in the Wall Street Journal in December 2019, Huawei received as much as $75 billion in tax breaks in a five-year span until then. And this amount was 17 times as large as similar subsidies disclosed by Nokia. So if you're still questioning whether Huawei is a state actor, look at how they handled the case of Meng Wanzhou, the CFO, who was just released 1 week ago. The entire diplomatic institution made it a top priority to get her released. It remains a mystery how the government could be so sure of the innocence of a private citizen. And historically, the Chinese government didn't care much about the welfare or safety, even, of the citizens. They invented the so-called human wave tactic during the Korean War that cost up to 1 million casualties because they just sent people continuously onto the fear of American heavy weaponry. They don't care. Why would they care so much? Not about Jack Ma, the founder and CEO of Alibaba, a world-renowned entrepreneur, but so much care of Huawei. That is the question. Another piece of damning evidence that myself can serve as personal testimony is where Huawei recruit their its talent. That's an interesting question, right? You can tell from which colleges, universities, you get next generation of scientists, engineers. I can tell you, Huawei recruited most heavily from colleges and universities historically affiliated with the People's Liberation Army. So PLA, this three alphabet keep popping up when you investigate Huawei. Top in the list of number of graduate government up at the tech giants has perennially been Xi'an-based Xi'an University. Formerly in the 60s, it was a prestigious PLA Institute of Telecommunication. I myself graduated from one of these, you know, colleges, so I knew that. And, you know, the Department of Commerce here in the United States, they have entities list where they show what are the institutions that should be banned. Right now, there are like 13 of universities where, 13 universities whose exchange in the field of personnel and equipment acquisitions would be banned. And Huawei drew heavily from the institution on the left, particularly the so-called Jungong Qizi, the seven university task of training scientists, technicians, serving needs of a PLA.
So it sounds like they kind of have it doesn't really, they sound somewhat unstoppable, I guess.
That's unstoppable, but now we live on the West Coast. We have a lot of technology firms, and they are, they're really throwing their support behind Huawei. Take Intel and Qualcomm as examples. They are lobbying strenuously to lift embargo on Huawei's chip supply. I told you, because of the embargo on Huawei, the smartphone sales have nosedived by 80%. They were in kind of crisis. But these firms, because they are the supplier, they're lobbying the Congress to lift embargo. So these are what I would call the ostriches. They just bury their head in the sand, no matter what.
What? Maybe you could help our listeners a little bit and tell us what types of products is Huawei currently involved with that would affect them directly. I know they're into telecommunications, which is cell phones and 5G. What other types of products are they involved with?
I alluded to earlier to the preeminence of U.S. firms in the field 20 years back. Now we are almost powerless. Probably only have Cisco as only representative in this field, but no longer in the world class. We used to have Lucent and other firms that built fiber optic lines that had that developed the new transmission technology. Huawei rolled out 5G technology about 2 years ago. They were the indisputable leader in the field. That means how our data is transmitted is controlled by firms who give this infrastructure, just the way loosened with Joe, back in early 20th century. So it include all the emails, it include all the graphics, exchange gears. So it basically, they are the gatekeeper of the information. If you allow Huawei to control the telecommunications equipment and networks, that means they can set up a backdoor, a patch in the software, and then your information will be leaked to their, supposed master, which is self-apparent in the case of most release.
Wow.
So basically, Huawei makes what you call infrastructures of communication. And so that is how essential its function is. When we hand this kind of infrastructure to Huawei, we are basically handing the flow of information, the control of flow information, the access of it, well, all to China. So basically, the CCP will eventually be able to control and get access to all the information, all our defense data or our important data will be open secret to China.
So not just private networks, but military networks, government networks.
Not just private. It's actually very disturbing that Pentagon was somehow dragged into this landscape as well. The Pentagon was one of the entities that defended Huawei, because Huawei could bring down the acquisition cost. So it's not just about private data, it's about military use as well.
Wow, that's pretty...
All the secrets that we want to keep from other governments, if we do not stop Huawei, we will be opening the back door of those secret information.
But look at all the money we're going to save if we.
Yeah, I'm sure that's the kind of that's where people really want us to, scrimp.
Yeah,
and that is why Huawei is so strategic. Let me give you two examples of the CCP strategically hiding strategic identities, right, or individuals in this case, right? So the widow of Shen Yixian was the founder of the Republic of China, basically Kuomintang government. His widow, Song Qingling, right, had been a Communist Party member, but that identity was hidden for decades, for the very reason that she will be able to pose as a non-Communist Party member to do the bidding for the Chinese Communist Party. Right? Because if you have that identity, then people may be alert about who you are. So it was arranged that her identity, or she joined the CCP. By joining the CCP, you have many, many privileges, right? But she joined the CCP, but kept her real identity away from other people, right? Another one is Zhang Xueliang, General Zhang Xueliang, who is a historical important character, because he was the one that had a coup against Chiang Kai-shek. That forced Chiang Kai-shek to stop the military action against the Chinese Communist Party. That was back in 1930. The Chinese Communist Party is about to be wiped out by Chiang Kai-shek. But the coup changed all that. Now, that general was also a CCP member, and yet was hidden, right? So there are... Let me make an analogy, right? So let me pick any Republican president or any Democrat president, right? So let's say he's a Democratic president, but his party affiliation is really with a Republican, or vice versa, a Republican president, right? His true identity is Democrat. So he won the election for the Republican Party, but doing Democrat policies, right? Just that, I mean, I don't know if you follow that, but that is what the CCP is good at, right? The hiding the identity of Huawei. So people would think it's a private company, right? But as Eric just pointed out, this hostage exchange is an indictment against that claim. Now, we should all know that Huawei is not a private company yet. There are still many U.S. companies doing the bidding for Huawei, including Pentagon. Think about that.
Yeah, that's...
Well, for any readers who are, I'm sorry, audience, who are questioning our claim about a Pentagon, now fire off on your computer or laptop and do a Google with me now. And just type in Pentagon of Huawei. I'm looking at one of the news from January 24th, 2020, and the headline goes like, Pentagon nixes its proposal to toughen limits on U.S. sales to Huawei. And another news I just saw says Pentagon pushes back on Huawei ban in bid for balance. It was Defense Secretary Mark Esper, I'm quoting verbatim, who struck the fittingly pragmatic tone while speaking with this newspaper, noting we have to be conscious of sustaining those technology companies' supply chain and those innovators. That's the balance we have to strike.
Wow.
And then there are this comment. Reddit, one of the readers said, wait, what? The United States Defense Department needs to be conscious of sustaining Huawei's supply chain? Well, Huawei is a direct threat to national security? That's a joke, right?
Oh, yeah. That's unbelievable.
Not just Huawei either. It's any and every company in China. U.S. has to start getting a life. There's another guy called Norman Clark. Vicky Simi said, why on earth would we allow the Internet to include routers that are controlled by authoritarian states, so on and so forth? I'm quite surprised that there's no widespread coverage of this issue.
Well, this was in the Wall Street Journal.
Education about this to our audience, yes.
No kidding. In the Wall Street Journal, it says Pentagon blocks clampdown on Huawei sales.
Let me make an analogy, okay, here.
Jeez.
All right? So imagine that back in the Cold War time, right, when a company, when a Soviet company is making the nuclear button our president would push, right, and we allow that Soviet company to make that button for this country, for United States president to push, to launch nuclear weapon, right? That is what this is amount to, that we're allowing Huawei to make key equipment for things that are critical for our defense. That's what it amount to.
Terrifying. We're gonna come back with you guys in the next hour. Got to take a quick break for the news, and we will be back with you. You are listening to We the People. Today is October 3rd, 2021, and you can catch us online at wethepeopleradio.us. Good job, Bill.
Oh, I know it.